Hi, I'm Don Fluckinger on site at the PegaWorld 2017 User Conference in Las Vegas. I'm here with Don Sherman, Chief Technology Officer of Pegasystems. He's also, by the way, Vice President of Product Marketing. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Tell me a little bit about the keynote session. I know you were involved in organizing and introducing some speakers. What was the main takeaway from your Pega point of view?
You know, so watching the keynotes, I think first and foremost, the one that was always the most interesting to me was what our customer had to say. And hearing from Sprint, hearing from General Motors, and hearing from Coca-Cola about the real value that they're pulling out of Pega solutions was, to me, probably the most impactful thing. Hearing General Motors talk about running 1 million decisions an hour on Pega technology with every OnStar click and every mobile interaction going through a real-time analytics engine to figure out the best thing to do, to me, that was some of the most powerful stuff that I took away.
Well, branding aside, what things can organizations use AI for in general nowadays? I mean, we've seen a lot of, you know, lead scoring, maybe uses of data mining, results in email communications. What are you seeing the potential for this technology?
So let me tell you something that our customers are doing a lot of already and have been doing for a number of years, and then something that I think is coming as a potential new use case. So for a long time, we've had customers using a product that we call the Customer Decision Hub. And what that does is use a bunch of different AI technologies. There's predictive analytics in there. There's machine learning or self-learning analytics in there. And what the Customer Decision Hub does is it allows them to, in real time, at each customer interaction, figure out the best action, the next best action, to have with the customer. So in Sprint's example, what we heard earlier this morning, was they're using that engine to figure out when they talk to a customer, how likely that customer is to churn, how big a retention rate they are, what their lifetime value is, and then figure out in real time what's the best and most cost-effective way for Sprint to try and retain that customer. And in under about 50 milliseconds, put in front of the customer in a digital channel or a retail employee or somebody in the contact center exactly the right offer to make to that customer. And we're doing that across a number of large organizations in telecommunications, in financial services, etc. That use case for AI is real, it's proven, it's delivering hundreds of millions of dollars of benefit to our organizations. The use case that I'm excited about that's sort of on the horizon, we've got a couple of customers beginning to get value out of it, is we'll work on workforce intelligence. And what that does is kind of combine robotics with data analytics. So it allows us to put a whole bunch of robots out on desktops. And they're not robots that are automating things. They're robots that are collecting data. We strip out all the PII data, because this isn't about tracking customer data. And it's actually not even about tracking employee data. We ship it up to the cloud. And then using Elasticsearch, and again, some combinations of other pattern matching AI technologies, we can make recommendations back to the business of, here are the opportunities that you might be able to improve your business. Here's a repetitive task that we see multiple people doing again and again and again. If you can automate that, here's the potential impact in terms of savings to your business.
Well, when you say robotics, and that's a buzzword flying around this show, when I think of robots, I think of, you know, animatronic, humanoid things lumbering around and scaring kids.
Yep.
What do you mean?
So here's the dirty little secret of the robotic process automation world. The vast majority of what everybody is really excited about with robotic automation are what we used to call macros. They're elegant. They're much more cloud managed. You've got much more control over how you can use them and tie them into things like document recognition and text recognition. But at the end of the day, they're macros. They use a lot of the same, if you're familiar with it, what used to be called Jalopy technology, high-level application programming interfaces. They use a lot of that same technology. So these robots are really little pieces of software that can run on a desktop. But what they're great at doing is helping integrate to some of those systems that have never had a service built around them, and we've never had a good API, so they've always just been manual tasks. And that's why when you walk into a contact center, you see somebody with 20 systems open on their desktop. Robotics can very quickly and very cost effectively strip all that complexity away and make the interaction much simpler. So I think there's a lot of power in robotics. We have lots of customers deploying robotics. I think we probably have the largest robotic deployment in the world with a customer in Australia who runs about 20,000 robots. But I also think that robotics have to be put into end-to-end context. It's not just about automating these little tasks. It's got to be about building an end-to-end automation that delivers the outcome that a business is looking for. And that takes more than a robot. It takes the ability to cross silos and orchestrate work between robots and between different parts of the organization.
So it sounds like what other vendors are calling chatbots. Is this just your brand of chatbot, or are you talking about a larger classification of software macros?
This is a collection of software in what the industry often calls robotic process automation, or RPA. There are also bots that are being used to engage customers on channels, and those are chatbots. So that's things like a messenger bot, that's things like intelligent virtual assistants, so things like Alexa and Siri and that kind of stuff. We're doing a lot of work with that, especially in the customer servicing channel. And to get things complicated, you may have your chatbot talking to an RPA bot to automate a process on your behalf.
Right.
Where I think is going to be interesting in the chatbot space, and I think where organizations need to be thinking, is how am I both effective in my use of chatbots, but also transparent to the customer? Because I don't think customers want to think they're talking to a human when they're talking to a chatbot. You know, when you talk to Alexa, you don't think you're talking to a human. You know you're talking to a bot, and that's fine. I think as we deploy chatbots, we have to keep that transparency and make sure that when the customer does need to move to engaging with a human, it's a seamless experience for them.
All this interaction, just because it can be done, doesn't mean it should be done. I mean, we talked about GM messaging its customers over the OnStar system or over apps or whatnot about maybe it's time to change your oil or you're using your brakes too hard or all these different little automations and all these little messaging touch points. But I was thinking at the time, thank goodness I drive a Toyota because all this messaging would drive me insane. And if I go to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, I'm about ready to change where I go for my instant oil change because those people try to sell me so many different things.
Yep.
Every interaction, it's like a used car salesman, you know, take a look at this one, right? Oh, you need a cabin air filter and buy ours and it costs $45 as opposed to the one you can get in Napa for $5, right? And like those drive me up the wall. So how does an organization figure out, just because they can automate all these communications and find all these insights with analytics, how do you pick the ones that drive the business goals?
So I would offer three pillars for an organization that needs to think about this. Pillar number one, it has to be transparent. You have to be upfront with the customer about how and why you're making recommendations. Netflix does a great job of this. Netflix recommends movies, but Netflix also tells you, I'm recommending this movie because you watched this other movie. Right? And it gives you as the consumer a little bit of faith in this algorithm. You understand and see how it's working. So you have to be transparent. That's why we think it's so important, for example, that if you're going to use an algorithm to help a salesperson predict how likely a deal is to close, salesperson's not going to believe that unless you let them peel back the onion and say, I'm predicting that because of this, this, and this piece of data. Right? So first, it has to be transparent. Secondly, it's got to be ethical. Organizations can't let the data govern itself. If the data governs itself, you get the Microsoft Tay chatbot that can be quickly trained to, you know, spew a bunch of racist nonsense because that gets attention, right? You've got to be able to govern this and put your corporate values around what the AI is doing. So it's not just purely data-driven decisions. It's data-driven decisions governed by your strategy, your ethics, your judgment. A great example of this is we work with the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, and they use us to do that real-time decisioning that I was talking about. 60-70% of the decisions that they make are something like, wish the customer happy birthday. Thank them for having been a customer for 3 years. it's not trying to sell you anything, but their judgment and ethics is, look, we just want to build a relationship with this person as an individual, and there are very low impact ways that we can do it. And the final thing, and perhaps the most important thing, is it's got to be good. It's got to add value to the customer. If it doesn't add value to the customer, if it's an air filter you don't want and could get cheaper someplace else, and I don't learn that quickly, you're going to go away. But, you know, the example I give, whenever I land in Europe, my telecommunication provider sends me a text message. The text message clearly lays out what my data rates are going to be in Europe and says, if you would like, for $20, we will turn on a temporary service that gets you unlimited calling and data in Europe. We'll turn it off at the end of this month. Do you want that? If so, click yes. Right? It's easy. It's timely to my need. It's not trying to sell me something beyond what my immediate needs are, right? And I can fulfill it in the exact same channel with no effort. If you do that with your data, customers will engage almost every time.
Last question. How do you, as an organization, and I'm thinking Pega customers or any customer who's using CRM and looking at automation, how do you figure out how to limit the scope of a project, limit the scope creep on one of these automation, machine learning, analytics projects so you don't eat up your ROI in just investigating the feasibility of it?
One of the things that one of the data guys on my team says, which I really like, is your data is always going to be messy. Start using it anyway. So I think part of the thing that organizations need to do is adopt this agile mindset of, my goal is to get to minimum viable, we sometimes use the term minimum lovable product. Something that will give me value, but is not my end-all boil of the ocean. And you could spend a lot of time building the world's greatest data mart. But I can assure pretty much every customer that I walk into, with 20 pieces of data, I can improve your customer experience today. I don't need you to get me all 600. We might get there in the future, and you'll get more tailored and more effective as we get there, but I bet you using 20 pieces of data is going to be more effective than the ad hoc or zero pieces of data approach you're taking right now. So the understanding, not sort of boiling the ocean, the other thing is to have a clear outcome in mind. Sprint this morning, their initial goal was, we want to improve retention when customers call our contact center. Full stop. Let's deploy that. Let's get that live in 90 days. Then we'll put it in the retail branch. Then we'll put it in digital. Then we'll figure out about cross-selling, upselling, and acquiring. But day one, let me drive one outcome. So pick the outcome you want to deliver and build the minimal valuable product to deliver that outcome.
All right. Well, that sounds like great advice. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. This was a blast.